Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your team excel and thrive in today's rapidly changing world. Your host is Dane Gruneveld, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. Today, Dane is joined by Marian Anderson. Marian is the founder of Fearless PX. She co-founded Fearless PX to help organizations build more inclusive, human-centered workplaces. She's also the co-host of The Elephant in the Org, a podcast tackling the workplace conversations most leaders avoid. Marian brings a thoughtful lens to the workplace challenges many teams are navigating today. Drawing on her professional doctorate research in progress on psychological safety and the evolving dynamics of remote, hybrid, and return-to-office work. In this conversation, she and Dane explore how trust breaks down when mandates shift, why autonomy matters more than location, and how COVID reshaped the workplace landscape, creating more adaptive conditions for women and individuals with disabilities, even as those gains now face new pressures. It's a candid look at what it really takes to build intentional, inclusive teams that thrive. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones, and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name's Dane Gruneveld, CEO of the Huddle 3 Group. And today I'm joined by Marian Anderson. Marian's got some cool titles. We've got founder of Fearless PX. We've got founding member of the Performance Innovation Collective, co-host of the Elephant in the Org podcast, which is just such a cool title, and PhD researcher. So we're going to talk about a bunch of that stuff today. Welcome to the show, Marian.
Hi, thanks for having me. Gosh, that makes me sound really geeky.
But geeky's kind of cool these days. It's fun.
I think it is.
Yeah, I think so. That's why I'm doing this podcast. I'm just a geek for talking to people who are passionate about making teamwork work better.
Yeah, for me, it's about making work suck less.
I love making work suck less. It sounds more tangible, more accessible for so many more people.
Indeed.
So tell us a little bit more about you. Obviously there's a bunch of titles, but like, how did you come to be doing all this cool work?
Oh my gosh. So I have had multiple lives. Like, it started off my life in retail and in retail operations, worked for some big brands like Calvin Klein, Levi's, way back in the day. And somewhere along the way transitioned into people. HR. I worked for Apple for a while, and it just kind of happened there. And I also got the opportunity to live in a bunch of countries. So I've lived in India, I've lived in Kuwait, in the United Arab Emirates. I'd always wanted to get to the US, and fortuitously that happened about 5.5 years ago, and I moved to the States and was working for a retail digital media agency in California. But then last year, I moved to Arkansas. So I now live in Northwest Arkansas, which is really lovely place to live, actually. So, yeah.
I've heard it's beautiful down there. Actually, one of my plumbers when I lived in Texas was from Arkansas, and he'd just tell me the most wonderful stories of his youth growing up. So I've got to visit.
Yeah. Northwest Arkansas, again, just with the presence of some big companies here, you know, it's pretty cosmopolitan, still small town feel.
Yeah.
But you know, you've got some really cool bars, restaurants, you know, university, stuff like that. So it's well provisioned.
Yeah.
Yeah, only tornadoes, that's the only thing.
Yeah, there's always something.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit more then about how, with all of that work experience, you've kind of entered this world of PhDs, because That's something that I've never gone down the path of. It actually scares me a little bit, but it's awesome when I meet people who are really committed to the path and doing the research and, you know, bringing great constructs out to all the rest of us.
Do you want the honest truth?
Yeah, honest truth.
I went back to school to do a PhD because it was COVID, and I was like, if I don't do something else, I'm going to become a raging alcoholic.
Fair. That's a good... That's a good motivator.
Yeah. The first 6 months of lockdown, I'd exhausted everything on Netflix, and I was living in California, and I'd worked my way through Total Wine of pretty much everything I wanted to try. And I was like, I need to do something else with my time, or I'm going to be in the Betty Ford. So so I'd done a master's program. I graduated in 2014. My master's is in international HR management.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my school back in Scotland were like, come back, do the PhD, do the doctorate. And I'm like, yeah, never. And then, you know, COVID happened. And I was like, actually, this might be the right time. So yeah. That's kind of how it came around. And I've been doing that part-time professional doctorate while working, which is
heavy.
One.
That would drive me to alcohol.
God, yeah. You have to be really passionate about what you're researching, because if you're not, you'll never do it. Like, yeah. You know, I've got a real passion for a lot of the more kind of, I guess, development sides of HR. I've got a real passion around psychological safety, psychological contracts, stuff like that. So it kind of, it's always really been an area that I've wanted to develop and do something with. And then it all came together. And the first 2 years of the professional doctorate is taught. It's like doing an MBA.
Right.
And then you go off and start research. And I thought, I want to do something around, you know, psych safety, psych contract. And I'm really fascinated by remote hybrid working, because it was all very early on midway through COVID, I guess. And then Elon Musk, like there's any other, bought Twitter. And he's like, yeah, I don't give a shit that you've all been working on from home and have been bags and it's all fabulous. Like, get your ass back in this office. And if you don't, you're all sacked, right? And I remember thinking, bloody hell, like, you know, that's tech. And you want innovation and you want creativity and you want people that are going to really move the business forward. But you've just killed any psychological safety that they had, because you've just, like, said, yeah, don't give a shit about what you want, just get your ass back in, or you can, you know, we'll accept your resignation type thing. And it kind of happened from there, and I thought, ooh, I think that would be fun to research. And then lo and behold, I don't know if anyone could have predicted the journey of remote hybrid return to office in the last kind of couple of years, but God, my PhD is writing itself. Like,
yeah, there's so much content out there.
It's like too much content. So, yeah, it's a really rich area. And no one's really connected psychological safety and remote hybrid return to office. So when you kind of bring those constructs together, it's fascinating.
It is fascinating. I mean, some people still haven't caught up on what psychological safety is. So they've got two problems. But for those that have, like, when you dive into the impacts of being remote or hybrid, on social, on that psychological contract or the psychological safety, I'd be intrigued by what you're seeing. Like at the very beginning of COVID, I saw some weird stuff, like people having monitors that would work out, you know, keystrokes that their remote team members were doing. So it didn't feel like there was a lot of safety or trust in some of those remote environments in the early days.
No.
What have you seen emerging as good practices, bad practices?
I mean, all of the above. I mean, apparently there's, you know, the software that does mouse movements and clicks and keystrokes, you know, apparently that's like a big deal on, on the app stores still. I mean, there's obviously a lot of companies that have tried, failed, tried again, started to get it right. There's a lot of companies that have went, yeah, screw this. This is just like too much work. It doesn't work. We need everybody together, because we don't have culture if they're not together. You know, there's all that crap.
Yeah.
Then there's the companies that have been very intentional about how they've tried to create distributed working and use all of the great technology that's out there now, but to help really enhance their culture. You know, it's, again, culture's not, it's a thing, but it's not a thing, right? It's like, just because you say it's going to make our culture better doesn't mean it does, right?
No.
So there's that. But, you know, nobody's figured it out, really. Like, there's no one-size-fits-all approach.
Nope.
Definitely not. most companies, it's every day, it's trial and error. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's increasingly now a lot of fear, yes, around the notion, particularly what's been happening in the last few months, God, in the last few weeks.
Yep.
So it's in such a state of flux.
Yeah, I think you're right. And where does that leave, you know, team members, leaders that want to kind of create their own playbook? Do you think there's, going back to that fear-based environment, do you think that there's a lot of anxiety just bouncing around teams, not knowing what corporate's going to roll out in the next 6 months?
Yeah. And again, you know, I talked about Elon, like him or loathe him, right?
Yep.
He does what he says he's going to do. Like, there's no bullshit. What he says is what's happening, right?
Yeah.
More or less, right? Yep. The worst scenarios are companies that are completely ambiguous, where they don't, you know, they've either shifted the goalposts. They've said, we'll always be remote. And then the wind changed and they're like, yeah, or that's not happening. And they've either, you know, stealthily tried to pull it in the opposite direction or not stealthily. So I think, you know, the changing of the goalposts has been very damaging for organizational culture, very damaging for psychological safety, retention, attraction, all of the things.
Yep.
I think the employee voice has never been more important.
Yep.
And there's so much happening right now to really quell that, to really push it down. And, you know, employees really are trying to vote with their feet. You know, every day there's studies out that say, you know, X number of employees will resign and leave as soon as, you know, a remote job is available. I mean, you only have to look at LinkedIn and
yeah,
you see roles that are advertised, right? Compatible roles, one's remote, one's in office.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like exponentially higher the number of applicants that will go for a remote role than, you know, the being on site. And the other thing that I'm seeing, it's not about remote and it's not about hybrid. It's about flexibility.
Mm-mm.
And autonomy. That's what people want. They don't want to be told, you have to be here every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Yeah.
They want to be treated like an adult, to say, okay, my new sofa is getting delivered on Monday, so I'm going to work at home on Monday. I'm probably going to come in, work kind of like, you know, 12 to 6 on Tuesday. But then on Wednesday, you know, I've got the kids to pick up, like, but I'm going to work at night. Like, that's what people want. They want that autonomy. They want to be able to maximize every minute of their life so they're having real balance. And most of all, they just don't want to be controlled by another.
Isn't it fascinating that once upon a time, certainly when I started my career, I wouldn't have dared to have said to my boss, hey, do you mind if I don't come in tomorrow because I've got a sofa being delivered? I would have been like, shh.
I know, right?
Get fired for that. I'm certainly not getting promoted. But now it's like, that's just the norm.
Well, it isn't, right? I mean, you know, it's interesting around how psychological safety is shifting. And again, it's not uniform. It's not everywhere. But where 3 years ago, 2 years ago, that person could have said, hey, I'm going to work at home, get my sofa.
Yeah.
Delivered, and no one would have batted an eyelid probably. But now in the companies where those mandates have come in, that psychological safety isn't necessarily there. It's certainly diminished, because then they're second guessing and they're thinking, actually, maybe I shouldn't. Oh, it's review time coming up. Oh, it's promotion time coming up.
Yeah.
Oh, and let's be clear, proximity bias is real.
I was gonna jump into some of the sort of problems, particularly if let's focus specifically on hybrid for a minute.
Mm.
So proximity bias is going to play out, I guess, worst in a hybrid environment. So how do you see that right now? Is that something that's really causing a lot of attrition risk? Is it causing a lot of like talent kind of stalling out of talent in the organization?
Absolutely. And it's compounded by other things. Like if you think about women, for example, right?
Yeah.
Again, we know statistically the differences and the challenges that women have entering the workforce, maybe after having kids or whatever, than obviously for males, right? You have that already, and then it's compounded by a lack of psychological safety around your ability to get promoted, your ability to get a raise, your ability, you know, not to be missed over for projects, right?
Yeah.
So women kind of get it hard, you know, for these very reasons. Similarly, those in our communities who experience disabilities, who have disabilities, I include myself in that.
Yep.
You know, it's real that the anxiety that someone with a disability goes through to ask for accommodations to be able to be in an office where maybe they never had to deal with that before because they always work from home. And there's a lot of very complex emotions that go along with that. Shame, guilt, you know, so many things. And we know, again, statistics tell us that COVID was one of the best, not one of the best things that happened, it was awful, but one of the best things that happened in terms of really pushing forward the movement for hybrid or remote working and being able to have those experiencing disabilities join the workforce.
Yes. It's a huge access lift for that population.
Inclusion. It's all about inclusion. And, you know, inclusion, dirty word these days, right? Yeah. DEI, like, the impacts are humongous. And, you know, again, proximity. If I'm disabled, I can't get into the office maybe 5 days. Maybe I can only do 5 half days. How's that going to impact someone's bias thinking about, you know, my ability for promotion or whatever? So it's really, really, really messy and nasty and ugh.
So when you see companies that are doing a good job on managing this, I would imagine in some of your research you found some great case studies, use cases. Like, how do they design for the work, you know, the allocation of task, the review of task, the way that teams meet and, you know, handle conflict? Are they very structured so that where you are doesn't matter, or do they have other approaches in that setting?
I think a lot of it is around intention and empowerment. And I think that the best organizational culture, certainly that I've experienced, are the ones that have grown in a gorgeously organic way without being forced and without overly being structured. Obviously, structure is important, right? But, you know, the healthiest cultures are the ones that everyone feels safe to contribute to.
Yeah.
And that's where psychological safety comes in. And I will die on this hill, but I believe that psychological safety is an absolute paramount requirement for a healthy organizational culture.
Yeah.
You know, and if you can get that bit right, if you can be very intentional about how you develop the day-to-day in your business, it will start to just take care of itself.
Yes.
But when you try to control and you prevent autonomy and you don't include your employees to be part of the solution, but you try to enforce and control, you're going to go completely the opposite way. So I think it's, yes, you know, asynchronous practices and technology and all of that, very, very important, right, to be effective, especially global organizations, distributed teams. But most importantly is how we think and how we support others and how we talk to each other and how we create a place, and I say place because it might not be physical, but a place where we can all thrive. And when we get that bit right, the rest of it takes care of itself.
Yeah, I like that. I love the way you touched there, Marion, on growing organically. Mm. I was asked recently, you know, tell me about your best experiences in teamwork. And as I thought back on it, I realized my best teamwork experience is when I was part of building a new team. It may not have been a new business. It may have been a regional office.
Yep.
It may have been a new service line. But building new teams were cool because we'd all get in there and we'd be like, okay, where do we start? Like, we didn't have a lot of definition around our role, and we all helped each other and learned how to work with each other.
Yeah.
And it just built this like bond, this chemistry that worked. And then over time, as you get big and you start to put all the processes and things in place, that's where I started to feel there was a bit of, you know, silos forming and fracture and tension that wasn't there before, when we were all just like, hey, how are we going to make the best out of today?
Yeah, no, it's true. It really is. And there's a real sweet spot in there. But I'm an eternal optimist. Uh-huh. I believe that I still haven't seen it, I think, but I believe that an enterprise-sized company with the right intentionality could maximize and achieve psychological safety. But that takes a lot of work, right? I mean, it's easy to nurture that and build that when you're in a startup and you're building a team and everyone's, you know, don't like the phrase rowing in the same direction, but the current is moving everyone in the same direction, right? But, you know, like with big oil tanker, or a cruise liner, if it goes off course, well, it takes a long time to right the ship.
Yeah.
And let's face it, most change management is shit, right? It doesn't work.
Totally.
It's just crap.
I'm surprised people call themselves change management specialists, because it's like never works.
Well, there's a couple that I've worked with that who I would say are phenomenal, right? But that's because they understand culture.
Ah, interesting.
So there's a few who really stand out. Paula Brockwell in the UK is a great example.
Uh-huh.
She's incredible. But yeah, you can't right a ship overnight, you know, if it goes way off course, off path. But the intentionality is what's important.
Yeah.
And I think what's really interesting is, like, again, look at what's happening around us right now with DEI, right? We've had all these companies who were, yeah, DEI is like the thing, you know, we're so committed. And then the wind changed and...
gone.
Yeah. What? DEI what? What? Don't even start me on Sharm with equity. That's a whole other one. But then you've got companies that have doubled down, Apple, Costco, whatever. And I think that that's the intentionality. You might not agree with all of the things or the way that they work and, you know, all of that. But intentionality, I think, speaks to employees.
I think so too. And if it's intentional, if it's well communicated, if it's followed up and delivered upon, then they trust leadership for following through on the plan, and they know where the values are. And, you know, it's not the values that they're posting on the walls. It's the values that they're living.
That's it. And
that's super important.
That's it. And, you know, the researcher that I am, you know, whenever I look at companies, you know, employee engagement scores, right?
Yeah.
Which, let's face it, most of them are crap anyway. But, when you do, if you put on your researcher hat and you do some thematic analysis, all of the things that come out, all of the qualitative data that comes out in terms of comments, it usually comes back to three things.
Right. Let's go through it.
Yep. Manager capability.
Uh-huh.
Psychological safety. Leadership transparency.
Oh.
Yeah. And next time you look at, you know, engagement scores, keep those three things in your head, and you will see that everything that tends to come out is symptomatic of one of those three things. Now, that's not like an exact science, and this is certainly anecdotal, right?
Yeah.
But I see when I apply thematic analysis to that type of stuff, that's what I see. And so if you think along those lines when you're approaching strategy, right? You're mm-hmm. trying to build out what you're going to do for the year and how you're going to help, you know, how are we going to achieve our organizational goals? Are my managers capable? Do they have the capability? Do they have the autonomy and all of the things that they need to thrive? Do, you know, how are we cultivating psychological safety?
Yeah.
How are we building reciprocal trust? How are we creating a space where people feel that it's okay to fuck up and to fail and to, you know, break stuff and to dissent and to share our ideas and all of that. Because if you can get that right,
yeah,
your business is going to thrive. And leadership transparency. Do what you say you're going to do, right? Yeah. Again, Elon, I don't like him, but he's authentic.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that's fair. That's very fair.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? Does what he says he's going to do. Don't say one thing and then let the wind change and say something else. Be authentic. Be transparent. Share as much as you can. Don't hide stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what I see.
I like it. There's so many questions that come off the back of that. There are three really good ones: manager capability, psych safety, leadership, transparency. If you think about the psych safety, that's always been an interesting one. I always like that. Very simple, pragmatic approaches. As a leader, show people that it's okay to fail.
Yeah.
And talk about it. So I've actually used that language a fair bit. I remember not so long ago, we had a leadership meeting going on here. One of our leaders that came into town likes to surf. So I took him for a surf in the morning. The surf was really good. I had the time wrong in my head as to when the meeting started, and we turned up half an hour late to a meeting I was hosting. So that's embarrassing.
But you weren't even drunk. You were sober.
I was perfectly sober. So I just walked in and I was just like, hey, I'm here to prove to you all that it's okay to fail. Right. I'm modeling good behavior. I apologize. And it was actually pretty cool. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It is so important. And, you know, employees take their cues from leaders. You know, I always say, you know, employees take their cues from mom and pop, or mom and dad, as we'd say in the UK. Right. Yeah. And if mom and dad say that it's okay, then it's okay.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And that's where that psych safety and that leadership transparency comes in. And again, I think a lot of leadership teams don't embrace those things enough.
No, I'm actually seeing that. It's funny you say about modeling. We had another conversation around modeling behavior, and we were talking about actually around DEIB and practices there, parental leave.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, here's a big problem with parental leave is that if the leadership team aren't taking it, other people don't feel like it's okay to take it. So like, I've got a baby coming in 80 days. So now I need to be living our values and being consistent with, hey, we believe in parental leave. I'm taking it.
Absolutely.
Which historically I've, or with my other children, I've been like, yeah, of course I'm taking emails from the hospital. You
know? Push, dear, push.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah, no video calls.
Yeah, no. No one needs to see that.
but it is, it's interesting that, and I'm advised by some great team members that is what people are watching. They are watching to say, not only a leadership doing what they say they'll do, but are they living the policies that we've created, or are they kind of living in their own bubble and being self-important and creating all of these mythologies in the business that, yeah, we have parental leave, but if you take it, it's going to be a career-limiting decision.
Oh, I mean, the unlimited PTO, let's just call that elephant out. I mean,
yeah.
What kind of crap that is, right?
Yeah.
And you know, the irony is that certainly organizations that I've worked with or consulted with, whatever, and they're like, let's have unlimited PTO. And you're like, don't do it. Don't do it. Your engagement scores are going to drop. No one's going to take it. No, 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 it's great. It's going to... Don't do it. Don't do it. And it always goes tits up, right?
Yeah.
And it's exactly that, because senior leadership are not role modeling and they're not giving those cues to everyone. It's okay. Dad says it's okay. Mom says it's okay, right?
Yes.
That is absolutely essential. So no, it's so important that you role model. And especially in this day and age.
Yeah.
Especially.
They all know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, once upon a time, executives sat up in the 31st floor and you'd never see them.
Exactly.
But these days, they've got your Facebook or your Instagram, or they know what's going on.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I once worked for a company way back, and the CEO had his own elevator.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And this was in retail. And you would get this, you would hear the ding, like that you knew the elevator was coming down, and everyone was like, panic stations.
I actually once heard of a CEO who trained staff what they were allowed to say to him if they bumped into him in the building.
That's amazing.
Yeah, because he didn't want to get stuck in small talk conversations.
Oh my God.
Can't pull that one off. It's wild. But staying with the fun topic, another thing that I like, which I think may tie into the psychological safety piece, is play. I think we're all overdoing work. And one of the things that I see in great teams, whether it's a sports team or whether it's a team at work or a community organization, is that if you create time and space for play, that's where you can be learning, testing, experimenting in a way that's actually enjoyable.
Oh my gosh. This is... So my co-host Danny, this is such a big passion of his, and it's something that I've really embraced in the last few years. The importance of play cannot be underestimated. And play brings up all sorts of connotations to people, right? It's like, yes. Oh, are we doing shitty word puzzles, or are we dodgeball? Right. But you're so right. It's about creating that space to build bonds, to build trust, to build psychological safety, and play is a great way to do that. And in fact, we did an episode of our podcast, The Elephant in the Org, last year with a wonderful woman called AC Holmes.
Okay.
She's on LinkedIn, everyone, so if you're interested in play, please look for it. That's what she specializes in, and it's about creating that space for play in organizations, and the impacts that come from that are remarkable.
Yeah.
And adults need it. We need it, especially HR people, because our life sucks most of the time. We need to have that time to be creative and to innovate, but mostly to build bonds with the people around us.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm glad you've put me onto so AC Holmes, like the AC letters
Holmes. A-C-E-Y Holmes.
Got it. Awesome.
You'll find her on my LinkedIn.
All right, I'll be following up there. And then I want to jump to technology, Marion. So as you think about asynchronous practices and ways in which teams can be more intentional about saying this is how we're going to get work done. Yeah. What are you seeing out there that are good technologies or good use of technologies to embrace that?
That's a really good question. And again, I think it really depends on what your business is and what you're doing, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if your organization works asynchronously well, then obviously there's a whole plethora of tools out there, you know, whether it's we're using AI, Perplexity, ChatGPT, it's so easy to do a lot of asynchronous work and then share it, right?
Yeah.
We all love Zoom. Teams is questionable. Slack. I mean, all of the things that we've been using for a while, we can't live without them now. You know, it's essential, and we've become so used to, I might be sitting next to someone, but I'm still going to send them a Slack message.
Yeah.
Because I'm lazy. So there's so many great things out there. I think AI is really going to be a massive game changer for distributed teams, remote working. And I think where that sort of becomes even more important and powerful is when you're working globally.
Absolutely.
And time zones. I mean... I've worked in international businesses majority of my career, and when I think back to the days when I worked for a company who was head office was in New York, and this is the early 2000s, and we all had Blackberries, Crackberries, and I remember I'd just be going to bed, New York was kind of getting into the swing of things, and all of a sudden you would just hear zzz, zzz.
Yeah, I remember that sound.
The anxiety was I'm going to have a heart attack. And that feeling of being on, I don't think that's gone away, really. I think we still have that. So I think that the tools and technologies that are helping us manage that better, to not be on, to be able to record meetings, to be able to use AI to record what's going on and then brief us the next day, all of that. Oh, I'm here for it, And I want to, you know, again, I think that's really important for mental health, for wellness, for rest. So yeah, I think that there are a lot of great things out there that are really going to help move the needle, but we have to be open. Our companies have to be open to that, and they have to try and you know, it's trial and error. Find what works, find what fits, and be open to trying new things.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. There's one tool that I'm really enjoying, which is Loom, which is one of the Atlassian products, and you can record the video, but then people can jump into pieces of it and create a note or record a video back, and it's very interactive. One of the things I really like about it, to your point about not needing to be always on, is that if I like to do my work late at night and I decide to post something at 11 p.m., I can say, hey, guys, I'd love to hear, you know, what you think about this by noon in 2 days' time. Mm-hmm. And it's not like it's going to go to this person on an email and wait for their response before it goes to this person. Everyone can get in it at the same time. Yeah. And people can opt in and opt out of what work they want to do. Yeah. If someone doesn't actually care about the new marketing initiative that I came up with at 11 p.m., then they don't have to look at it. That's fine. Yeah. So I like the kind of the accessibility that can come with some of those tools.
Yeah, they can for sure. I think the one thing that we've not solved for, and if we talk about burnout, because this is another big thing that I'm passionate about. And again, it ties into my research, right? And everything we're talking about. But if you think about technology and technology that allows us to function 24/7, and I mean us as a society, right? Whether it's online shopping or, you know, like medical stuff, like whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've all worked in companies where you get a P0 ticket or a P1 ticket and everything, like, you know, the CEO is getting woken up out of bed at like 3 a.m. and every 20 minutes is an update, like that stuff, right?
Yeah.
We haven't really solved for that. And, you know, the burnout that those types of episodes bring, and they're very relevant, very prevalent in tech. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, well, maybe there are. I haven't come across it yet, but I haven't heard of solutions for that in terms of supporting the employee, right?
Yeah.
And burnout that they're going to feel. Because if something's gone tits up, they're then going to be doing however long is necessary to get it right-sided again.
Yeah.
You know, if your entire supply chain has gone down because there's a tech issue, it's all hands on deck, right? But the output of that is significant, because if someone's doing like 17, 18 hours and then they're trying to catch up with, like, no. So I think that we're still trying to figure out the people plus tech thing, but we have to make sure we're thinking about well-being and burnout and mental health. And I think that no one's figured it out, so we all just kind of
yeah, a bit of a blind eye to it,
right?
And that's a different, I guess, that's interesting, right? There's the physical proximity bias, but I wonder if we're going to start seeing the research that there's also like a technology proximity bias. What if you and I, Marion, love to do all of our work by, you know, Mural or some visual planning tool, and then other people prefer Excel spreadsheets? Are we going to see that, you know, the team that use the visual planning tool are promoting each other and getting the best resources over the analytical team? I don't know.
I think that already happens. Like, if you work in an organization which has Teams and Slack is predominantly loved by techies, right?
Yeah. Teams, creatives, maybe. Techies. Yeah.
Exactly, right? So I think that already kind of has started to happen. But I think that there's real potential for that, and that's quite scary. I think there's so many things that we've not even thought of yet.
Yeah, there is. And so it keeps bringing me back to that word intentionality that you pushed on, which is, if as a company you're intentional about exploring how work gets done, who does it, who's not being included, where the tension points are, you can probably start to find some themes in the organization which you may want to harness as opportunities or tackle as challenges.
Yeah, I think that intentionality, if you really are intentional about creating an organization where people can really thrive and do their best work, you can't shy away from the hard stuff.
Yeah.
You need to just pull up your big boy, big girl panties and get the fuck on with it, right? Yep. Ask the hard questions, be curious, don't be afraid of what people are going to say, bring them into the conversation, create those change agents, you know, all of that stuff. The companies that do that are the ones that will win. The companies that continue to not do that and continue to do the very kind of performative stuff.
Yeah.
We're just ticking a box.
They fall apart.
Yeah. I mean, they might not fall apart. They might thrive to an extent, but their people aren't. Their people are churning and burning.
Yeah. And that's an interesting thing. You know, I've worked in a few organizations recently where I've been saddened to think on the people that left.
Yeah.
And often people had good reasons and often they went to better things, let's be honest. But the business is often failing people. I like the way you frame that. The business may be thriving, mm-hmm. but the people are not. So if the business isn't truly serving its people, particularly if it's in the people services industry, there's work to do, right? There's something that's missing that's not being talked about that may be uncomfortable, and building that muscle, whether it's through, you know, play or whether it's through actually very serious meetings and constructs to tackle the tough stuff.
Yeah, and that's where
needs to happen.
That's where that psychological safety is just critical. It's just paramount. Yeah. Like if you don't feel psychologically safe.
Yeah.
To call out the elephants, right?
Yeah.
You know, so not trying to plug our own podcast, but if I explain the rationale behind the title, because we psychological safety is like the number one thing for us. And we realized that, you know, the elephant in the room, right? The elephant in the org, if psychological safety existed everywhere, there would be no elephants to call out.
Yeah.
Because there'd be nothing to call out. Well, that sounds like utopia, doesn't it? That sounds like, you know, living in a tropical island somewhere. That sounds great, but it's not reality.
No.
But what if we could do the work to try to elevate psychological safety as much as we can? That means that all of the stuff, all of the time that we waste on the crap that really doesn't move anyone forward or create a lovely experience for anyone, that time could be used innovating. Driving business, like that's where that time should be, and not dealing with the crap that happens because we don't want to talk about stuff or we're not psychologically safe to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Final question on that, particularly you and I both being imports, you know, we've grown up and worked in some different jurisdictions, but the HR legal environment, you hear a lot of people talk about CYA, right? A lot of leaders, a lot of HR departments, a lot of legal teams get afraid of certain conversations because of the litigation risk here in this country. Yeah. How much is that getting in the way of the way we have conversations if you compare this culture to others?
Oh, I mean, any views expressed here are anecdotal and certainly not backed up by any research, but I would hazard a guess. Right. And I'd love to see some statistics on
me
this.
Too.
I would hazard a guess that organizations that rank higher in psychological safety have way less litigation.
Yeah, interesting.
And organizations that don't, that are, they feel autocratic and there's no space for self-thought or autonomy or anything like that. Those are the ones where the employee law cases, legal cases and stuff, discrimination, whatever, they're the ones that they're going to be higher, because when people are not, when they don't feel psychologically safe and they don't feel like they're thriving at work, well, guess what? They're pissed off. So when they're pissed off, every little thing that happens pisses them off more.
Yeah.
And it's psychological contract, right? So the analogy that I always use when I'm lecturing or whatever, training people, when I'm explaining psychological contract, I talk about windshield. So I talk about, you know, you start a new job, right? It's like getting a new car, a brand new car straight off the lot, right? And you get the car and like the windshield is pristine and the car's immaculate, right? And you're like, this is great. I'm in the honeymoon period. This is going to be amazing. And then you're out driving one day and you get a little pebble dings your windshield.
Yeah.
And it's tiny, you barely see it. But you're like, oh, that's my new windshield, right? Well, think about the organisation. You know, you get passed over for a promotion or you know, a project you're on gets cancelled and you know it's important or whatever it might be. There's the ding to your windshield, right? Yep. And then, you know, a few days or weeks or months, even years later, that ding starts to get a little bit bigger and that crack grows. And then something else happens in the org version of this story. Like, you know, your best friend at work leaves, or the boss that you work for, who you've loved and built a really great relationship, they leave or they promoted out or whatever it might be. Or, you know, you don't get the pay rise that you were promised, or half your team gets laid off. Well, guess what? That crack gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And there comes a point in psychological safety or in your windshield where the crack's so goddamn big, you can't replace it, you can't fix it. No one's going to come out in a van and magically fix your windshield like they do in the commercials, right? Like, next thing, your windshield just shatters and that's it, you're done. That's psychological contract, right?
Right.
There gets a point where you're so far past the point, your windshield shatters and you're done. So that's what happens, again, anecdotally, but in organisations, when the company chips away and chips away and chips away, the people get so pissed off. When that windshield cracks, they don't give a shit. They'll take them to court if they think that they're going to get money. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that, again, you get your culture, right, and your environment for psychological safety. Yes, not everyone's going to have the best utopian experience, but certainly I would say your risk somewhat diminishes significantly. Yeah,
that's a great call to action. It makes me think that there's actually a self-fulfilling prophecy there, which is if you're afraid of having tough conversations because you don't want to get litigated against, you're going to get litigated against. So tough conversations in the right way.
That's it. And be intentional.
Yeah, yeah. That's neat. Well, it's been such a great conversation, Marion. I'm excited to see where the research continues to in your studies and publications. We covered some really cool stuff around, you know, flexibility, autonomy, thriving in the workplace, being treated like an adult, which has changed from when a lot of us started our careers to now, thanks to the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I love the way that you talked about some of the asynchronous practices and technologies, but the need to be intentional. Mm-hmm. And naturally, we dived into some of the proximity biases and some of the other challenges that I think are blind spots for many organizations. And then this final piece, naturally tied to your great podcast, the Elephant in the Org podcast. You know, the elephant is the tough conversations, the things that aren't being addressed. And it's a great place for teams to be spending more time if they really want to build that healthy culture.
Absolutely. Just be brave, be courageous, communicate. And, you know, above all else, a bit of common sense goes a long way.
Yeah, it really does. It really does. Well, that's neat. So if any of our listeners want to find you, want to find the Elephant in the Org podcast, the Performance Innovation Collective, where do they reach out?
You can hunt me down on LinkedIn or look for the Fearless PX on LinkedIn and you'll find links to our content there. Same for the Performance Innovation Collective. I'm posting about this stuff all the time, so find me on LinkedIn.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Well, thanks for your time today, Marion. I look forward to teaming up soon.
Yay, thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time,